I remember making like drum and bass remixes like 2-3 years ago, them not getting officially like signed. Nobody really wanted to mess with them. And now, you know, the tables have turned. A lot of people have definitely like turned their head and it's coming to the States.
Hey guys, welcome back to Rave Culture Cast, your weekly guide to the EDM community, music festivals, and more. I'm your host, Emma Kapotis. What is up, fam? How are we feeling? Guys, technology is failing me this week. I don't know. Mercury is not in retrograde. I don't know if anybody else is experiencing this, but my computers, both of them, keep freezing. I just feel like all this stuff is going on. I don't know what's happening. So hopefully you can't hear the fan on my computer because it's having a moment right now. But with all that being said, I am so pumped. Life is feeling good, guys. It's about like 9 days from Groove Cruise, which I'm super excited for. By the time you guys are hearing this, I am actually on my way to Groove Cruise. This is dropping on day one of Groove Cruise, so I'm so excited. Rave Culture Cast is a media partner this year. It's my first Groove Cruise. I have so much content that I'm going to be shooting. I'll do a full like review and recap, artist interviews, all that stuff. So the next few weeks after this amazing interview with Lizzie Jane are going to be a ton of Groove Cruise content. So just wanted to let you guys know that. Give me a follow at Emma Kapotis and at Rave Culture Cast if you want to follow along with all of the adventures the next few days. I got Wi-Fi on the boat so that I can post and get some work done. But needless to say, it's going to be a very exciting week, starting with today's episode. So I've got my girl Lizzie Jane on, our first artist interview of the year. She is such an incredible talent, and she's got so much new music coming out this year. It's insane. And you're going to see in this interview like how passionate she is about it, how dedicated to her craft, to her artistry that she is. She speaks like so eloquently about what she does, and it's really exciting to see her at this time in her career. So a couple dates you guys need to take note about. Lizzie's debut EP, Ignite, is going to be dropping in April, and then her first single from the EP, Washed Away, is coming out on February 29th. So bookmark those dates. Also, I love that it's February 29th because this is a leap year, so that just feels special. But give her a follow at Lizzie Jane, all of the things. Go show her some love and support. And quickly, a message from one of our sponsors, Lunchbox. If you guys didn't know, they are having a winter sale that ends on January 31st. So if you have always wanted to get their iconic hydration pack, which is my tried and true, like number one festival essential, this is the time to do it. It's discounted from $129 to $109. And if you use my code Kapotes, K-A-P-O-T-E-S, you will save an additional $15, I believe. So definitely plug that in to save money off your hydration pack. And then if you guys need the snack or sling pack, my discount code is EMMAK, just to not get you guys confused. It's two separate codes depending on what you're picking up from Lunchbox. But hands down, best product I've ever used for festivals. It's amazing. It's anti-theft and I swear by it. So now is a great time to take advantage of their winter sale to just get some money off of it. So I will leave that link down below. All right, moving on to our Amnesty Bin. If you guys are new to the podcast, this is a segment that we kicked off this year. It's an anonymous segment that our listeners, you know, they drop off their rave confessions. I pick them up, I share them with you, and we kind of chat about it a little bit, but no one will ever find out. I take this to the rave grave with me. So this was a juicy one. This person like spilled some tea today. I loved this one. They said, when you start working for festivals, they lose the magic. They really said that, okay? They're showing you behind the scenes. They're lifting the curtain, if you know what I mean. No, but I mean, everybody feels differently about it. Like when you start working in the scene, it can definitely change how you view things. It can change how you experience things, especially if you're working it. It may not have that same magic as when you were a fan or when you first got started. So I can relate to that a little bit. I definitely feel like I still have that magic and enjoyment every time I go, but I will agree with this person that it feels different than just like when you're attending it. So I thought that was a nice little hot take there. So thank you, anonymous listener, for submitting that one. If you guys want to send in your own confession, it can literally be anything. Don't hold back. Funny, hilarious, candid, random, gross, whatever you want to confess. Send it over to raveculturecast@gmail.com. That is raveculturecast@gmail.com. And I will read out your anonymous submission for our Amnesty Bin. All right. With all that being said, you guys, again, I hope you have an incredible week this week. Sit back, enjoy this episode with Lizzie Jane. She is incredible. And again, go check out her music that's coming out this year. Give her a follow and let's dive in. Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. So today we are kicking things off. I have my first artist interview of the year, which is super exciting. I have my girl Lizzie Jane here, who hails from Tampa, now living in Denver, Colorado. She is a quadruple threat songwriter, vocalist, producer, DJ, live instrumentalist. She does it fucking all. Her unique background of talents has helped her build up a loyal following and tons of show appearances, festival appearances. Her debut EP, Ignite, is dropping in April with the first single, Washed Away, coming out on February 29th. So bookmark those dates, you guys. She's also the host of the Lizzie Jane podcast, where she uses her platform to shine a light on other artists and industry professionals in the music scene. I was lucky enough to be a guest on that, so definitely go check out the episode, and I'm super excited to have her here. So welcome to the podcast, Lizzie Jane.
Hello. Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad we got to do this, and yeah, it feels like such a long time ago, even though I don't think it was that long ago that you were on my podcast, and time just moves so incredibly quickly. And to conceptualize, like, I felt like 2023, there were a lot of amazing things that happened, but it all happened just like that. And it went by so, so quickly.
Yeah, I know. It's insane. And you have like so many exciting like things coming up this year, which I'm pumped about. So before we dive into things, like, you know how people say like, this is my blank era. I want to, do you have a vibe for 2024? Like, what is your era for 2024?
This is my authentic era. This is like, nice. That's my, I want to say through and through, this is alongside the EP Ignite, that the full EP drops in April, which is super exciting. We have a few singles that are coming out beforehand, starting at the end of January. And then we've got one in February and March. And we've got this full rollout that I'm just so excited for. And, you know, it just feels like the art is very authentic and true to me. I've gone through so many different kind of chapters of the Lizzie Jane project, where I've established myself in kind of one lane, and really I felt pushed it to a certain limit of like my capabilities, all the while keeping my talents of like my past life of being in a band and singing songwriter stuff and playing instruments. And like, how far can you push this until you have to be realistic enough that you're turning around and reaching that ceiling and maybe that subgenre? So, okay, now we pivot and we take what we built in this lane, maybe it's dubstep lane, you know, heavy bass music. That's like my roots in this project. And we take those influences and we keep building and we add them into the next kind of evolution of the project. And that's what I feel like this is. Like, where does your voice work the best? Where does, you know, your artistic fulfillment feel like when you're actually writing music? And like, this is that EP, even though it's so old, like it was written in the COVID era. Like it definitely, COVID pushed me to that point to say, okay, what do you really want this project to represent? What do you want the Lizzie Jane name to really be like? What's that why? Like, what is going to make you think or know that that's Lizzie Jane when you hear that record, when you hear that EP, when you hear that album or collaboration? And that really all bodied itself into what the Ignite EP is, and then everything after it, which I'm so excited for all of that other work that's coming out. Some remixes and stuff, like the Griffin remix was done post EP, but like, yeah, authentic era as far as singer-songwriter Lizzie coming really into the electronic dance space, cutting real like dance records. Like, I want you to be able to dance. And I think that's where the drum and bass kind of alleyway has really, not only is it blowing up everywhere, which is like awesome and definitely in my favor, but it's something I remember making like drum and bass remixes like 2-3 years ago, them not getting officially like signed. Nobody really wanted to mess with them. And now, you know, the tables have turned. A lot of people have definitely like turned their head, and it's coming to the States. The States are really always the last kind of market to really eclectically grab something, just like you see the hard techno, Sarah Laundrie, like all of those guys coming over from, you know, Europe, South America, and everything like in between. And then you've got the drum and bass kind of guys coming over, guys and girls coming over, which is so exciting. And there's been lovely drum and bass producers in the United States, like Camarion, Reaper, Skeleton, pushing like these waves for like quite some time. But I think now everybody gets their day in the sun, but it's still kind of like drum and bass has that space in the bass rushes of the world and on the bass stages of the world. So like for that, for me, it was like the happy medium of you still get that like heavy hitting energy, but it's also stuff that is really danceable and really works well with your voice. Like all of these different factors that I had to take into consideration when saying, okay, how do you bring like the best of yourself to your project and like keep it moving forward?
Right, right, right. Oh, if you're, if you're telling me this is like drum and bass and dancey Lizzie Jane era, I'm so fucking here for it. And
yeah,
I'm honestly,
yeah.
Like, not mad at hard techno and drum and bass being like the next wave of music. Like,
at all.
Down for that. That sounds so good.
No, absolutely.
It cool. Yeah, yeah. It's go cool ahead. To see you I'm gonna use the word blossom, but like blossom into like just this beautiful career, and you can tell like you feel so comfortable in yourself and your art and like where you're going. And I'm curious if you always had a creative outlet like since when you were young, or if like you ever felt like you were in like a box really for a really long time that you had to like break out of and get more creative, or were you this way since like you were a kid and you knew where you were going to be in a creative outlet?
So like transparently, I mean, the thing about fitting in a box, I think that really goes back to just electronic music in general. You know, you more than most are aware of speaking to so many artists, being involved in the scene for so long. You know, a lot of these artists, when they get their break or they have a single kind of really pop off, and EDM is like one of those genres where if you have a Do It To It, or you have a Worlds, or you have Language, or you have that one record that just smashes, it can completely make your career.
Right.
But then, you know, using a Craze as an example, where in college, I would see him at Gilt Nightclub in Orlando, and he made dubstep and trap. You know, it's kind of understanding like when you blow up from like a back point of view, from like an agent or a manager or a label, or, you know, whatever, whoever wants to program you with whatever type of style, you're really expected to fit in this box. And I think the most I've ever felt in a box is really trying to say I love bass music and I love dubstep, and like I did find my space in that, and I still love making melodic infused type stuff. And then again with the drum and bass, you're taking those bass influences. But when I started to nationally tour after I got done with my residency, which was post COVID, so like 2021, it was really difficult for me to feel like I could keep excelling and not doing the same thing over and over again, especially when it became something that I didn't necessarily enjoy. Now, I will say we're like privileged enough to like really lead a passion as our career and like live our dream as our career. And just like any job has things where you sigh and you go, I don't want to do this. And like, this doesn't make me happy. I think that's something where it's like, yeah, you're not always going to be happy doing what you're doing, or you're not always going to be like, oh, wow, I want to do this. But I think that, and taking a step back and realizing like, hey, if you keep putting yourself in this box, I don't think any movement's going to happen. Like, you're just beating your head against like a doornail and like it's only going to go on for so long before like you do what you need to do now, which is pivot and take those influences and keep on moving. So like as far as being placed in a box, I think that's the only time, like 2020 into 2021, early 2022 was the only time I really felt like it was really difficult for me to see the future of the project. And like I look back at those times too, I feel like especially as girls, you like when are you changing your hair all over? Like when are you changing your look a million times? Like that uncertainty and like not really like not necessarily like knowing, but just like throwing shit at the wall. And it's like, okay, what do you like? What don't you like? Like my journey has definitely been a unique one, as I definitely started as a DJ. Like my early years, I've been doing music forever, like way before the Lizzie Jane Project. Lizzie Jane Project was created like end of 2018, beginning of 2019. When I was in school, I danced 6 out of 7 days. I did the whole Rocket thing and did the summer intensives and like it was, that was like another like harsh reality where it's like, hey, like you're a great fucking dancer, but you're also 5'8" and you're never going to be your ballerina body that's going to allow you to excel in like these different divisions. And alongside that, started classically trained in like piano, violin. We did some cello stuff. My violin and cello teacher did not like me. That ended very quickly. Kind of took a step away from music, went really into dance. Did theater just because it made sense. It was kind of like, hey, let's just combine everything. And then I remember when I was 13, I was taking private lessons with this awesome studio musician who he was just like, it doesn't really matter what you want to do, but I'm going to make you do all of it. So like I would play the drums, I would write the piano, I would write the guitar, I would write the vocals, we would track all of them. Like we would go through that kind of whole motion without me stepping on like the engineer side of it. He was working in programs like Reason and SoundForge, like ancient, like dinosaur programs. But I was like writing all of this music, and it kind of, I did like some pop stuff and then some alt stuff. And I remember I would get like detention because I was writing lyrics in my French class. And like music has always been a part of everything. And yeah, when I was 13, I kind of had a parental figure say, yo, you're really invested in all of this and like you're good at all of it, but like what do you want to do? And it was like a very harsh reality for like a 13 year old to be like, oh wait, I like doing everything, but like I if I want to do something full in, you just need to go full in and do it. And I was just like, I want to continue with music. So with that, then I kind of, you know, I still love dancing and it was like great exercise and all of that stuff, but it then became like a very hobbyist kind of deal where then all of my attention went to music in school. And I had a band at 14 where all the guys were like twice my age and we wrote awesome music and we played kind of a local circuit in Florida. And if you're like local to Florida, it was like State Theater and Orpheum, and we did like shows with like Blackville Brides and Blackville Brides and like Oasis, and we did some stuff with Flyleaf, and like, and it was like all opening stuff, you know how you see like local DJs open, but it was like local bands opening. And you know, we were in the punk scene and the hardcore scene. And then it came time to where I did a tour with Rookie of the Year when I was 16. My mother came with me, and it was a very interesting experience. It was only a 3-person band. I played bass, keys, and sang. We had a drummer, we had a guitarist, and it was like a really, really cool thing. I think it's just, you know, when you're like a kid, you don't realize like a lot of the realities of like touring and like how much money we lost and like what were we doing and like all of that stuff. But I pull from those situations now, and like it's definitely helped me in my current day where, you know, like I don't have my mom right here and I'm doing a lot of stuff. Like I'm very involved with my team and everything that my team does, and I'm a very kind of like type A personality where if there's a decision being made, I like want to be the one to make it, or at least be ahead in the room that has like a voice. And then I graduated high school and it was like, oh, go be an adult, go like study, you know, study politics and, you know, get a degree in international affairs and maybe you'll work on the Hill. And yeah, after year one of that, I said, that's not for me. I did everything. I did the double major. I did the sorority. I went all in. And I was just like, hey, I tried my absolute best. And I felt like I got the 4-year college experience in 1 year. And I was like, I don't really need to do this. I just kind of want to get a degree and then just continue on. Mm-hmm. But I want the degree to be in something that I enjoy. And I was just like, there's nothing that I can pull myself to now except for the thing that I've done my whole life, which is music. So I went to Full Sail. I got a Bachelor of Science in Foley Sound and Engineering. So that's like the bones breaking in a movie, or like all the sounds you hear in movies, like that's kind of what Foley is, like that's cars crashing and you know, people screaming and dying and little things like, you know, carrots being cut in the kitchen, like those are all dubbed over by like Foley sound artists. So that was kind of my focus. And then amidst that, I started DJing when I was in college in Florida. And that in the first like 2 months, I remember I got an opportunity to play it at a local venue with Alliance, and they do a lot of shows in Jacksonville and Tampa and Orlando, and they do block parties, and it's a very lovely independent event company. And then I somehow ended up at Ritz like a month into DJing, like making no music, like not even conceptualizing how to really start to be an artist like in this lane. Like I was a metalhead, I was a hardcore girly, and I liked going to festivals, I liked going to raves, but that was like 1 to 2 years of my life. Like it wasn't something that I was ever, it's wild because it's like I love the community and I love like raving and what it stands for, but I can never honestly say that like I was like that, because before I was like 21 I was playing as like a resident at Ritz, and it was like, we're going to throw you in on the deep end. The manager there and the talent buyer there at the time, you know, were very transparently aware of like where I was in my journey. And, you know, at that time there was DJs coming out of that club that were doing really, really well. And I was like, okay, so you can either expedite your journey and maybe make some mistakes in front of a lot of people and figure out yourself here, or you don't, and maybe this takes twice as long, and you kind of come forth with the music first. And now I'm like such a music girly that it's definitely, it's just this weird thing where it was this journey where I started as a resident on a dubstep night. What makes sense for me to start making dubstep? And it goes hand in hand with metal, and it goes hand in hand with what I loved at the time. And I still love bass music. I think that people that I've met along the way, like you have to at one point like pull yourself back and you're like, okay, what are your like strong points? Like what are your strengths and the things that you could bring in a room if you were with like 10 people that you were better, that were better than you? And it's like not making sound design for dubstep. It's not like anything that falls in that bass world. It's like songwriting and conceptually mixing and composition and structural things. And like, that's all the shit that I really love to enjoy. And when I started collaborating with other artists, I started noticing myself being like, oh, like this is what I really like and what I'm good at. And that's how I think over that like 3 year period, it really went from me emulating what other people do to it developing to be what I wanted and what I took from these different influences. And that's really what made this EP. Like this EP is literally all over the place, but we have really awesome remixes that are in every different subgenre. And then moving past that, like all of the singles and remixes that I have coming out for the rest of the year, I mean, it's like dance music, like through and through dance music. So I'm excited. Yeah.
Hell yeah. I mean, just hearing your journey, like, okay, so there's a couple things I want to point out. One, I love that you put like, you're all in or nothing. Like, there's no half-assing. You're like, my whole ass is going in this. Like, you're like, I'm doing the whole fucking thing, which I think is awesome to see because you get that full experience. And it's cool to see your journey, because I think a lot of people, I've talked about this before, have come from like the emo, pop punk, alternative world into dance music, which same thing here. That's like all of the festivals I went to were like rock and alternative festivals in high school. So there is like a cool transition that happens there. And it makes sense like how you started in the bass music scene. Like if that's what you kind of were getting booked for and that club was playing primarily, it makes a lot of sense to like start out there. But it's cool to hear your journey of like, even like as a 13-year-old having like as profound of a thought of like, what am I going to do with my life?
It's
pretty crazy that you like knew that early on, but it's cool to see like your whole evolution. So I'm pumped for you to hear that you've like reached this point in your career where you're going to be able to like step out and try, like experiment and try all of these different things. Was there somebody when you were doing this EP that like you reached out to, or any influences or something, like you're doing remixes and stuff, like were there other artists that you like really like immediately knew you wanted to collaborate with when you started to come up with your tracks?
So for this EP is actually, I don't have a single collaboration on it. It is all me. And the people who were bringing in to remix the tracks and really make them, you know, dubstep or house music or, you know, fall in those different lanes, like you'll see in an average remix pack, they're all people who have become like very dear friends of mine. And it was like, hey, like I'm finally like embarking on this journey, like come along kind of deal. But I've learned so much from like just observing. And again, like the podcast has given me so much insight because that was started in COVID too. And like, even though 2020 to 2023 isn't, or 2024, oh my God, isn't like a super long time, it's still so long for me to reflect of like where I was and like where I am now. And I think so much insight that I've gotten from people who I wouldn't necessarily even consider like acquaintances were from that podcast, from stories, from mistakes, from like things along their journey. And then like personally from just an aspirational point of view as an artist is like, you know, the Madions of the world, like the Porters of the world, the Flumes of the world. It's seeing their full evolution of their show. Like I remember seeing, you know, listening to like Porter's 2016 Holy Ship set, and he's throwing like mid-tempo and like nasty bass music, not necessarily like the dubstep that we know today, but very bass influenced, like trap and like 100 110, like just really deep wonky stuff. And then him to like to see him go from that to like Worlds to having Nurture, the fully live show that has nothing to do with DJing. And then he plays a countdown and he's playing like a hard style set. Like that's what's like so inspiring to me. It's like, how do we get there? And I think it's just doing you so much that people can come on board, people can come off board. Like the 95th percentile of like your fan base, you're not the main star. Like they're going about their life, they're going to their raves, they have their own career, whether it's in music or finance or corporate America or whatever, whatever. And like you're their release, where maybe you'll like release an album or an EP they love, and maybe you'll release an album or an EP and they're like, what the fuck was that? Like it's okay to have that. And then you'll always have that 5% that no matter what you do, you could fall off a building naked and they'd still be like, we love you. Like this is so great. And I think it's not so much like for that, like 5% that like you appreciate every single day. It's like at the end of the day, like it has to be for you. And I just feel like artists like Flume, Madion, like they're different, what you said earlier, like they're different eras, like the Good Faith era, the this, the that, like being able to like do that kind of pop star reinventation of not only themselves, but their aesthetic and their brand and their this and their that. That's the goal, like through and through. Like I totally understand it's easier to find something that works and works really well and you nail that into like a door until the end of time. I'm just not so, I think just from seeing my journey thus far, which has been a fairly short journey compared to most artists, like I'm not the type of person that's going to bring my best foot to the table unless I'm really genuinely excited about the art that I'm making and the stuff that we're doing. And then like talking to people like Nitty Gritty and like having these like artistic fulfillment conversations where it's kind of like you have 80-20, like you do 80% of like what you like, what you know is good for the market you're at right now, like where your sound is currently, like either like committing to the drum and bass era for 1 to 2 years, doing an album, doing this, doing that, or singer-songwriter, indie kind of Madion style, Flume style stuff. And then you do 20% of the art that's like so you, that you don't give a fuck. Like those, those, you know, if you got like a 10 record album, then, you know, two or three of those songs are going to be like, yo, it's whatever you want to do. And I think you hear that when you listen to certain albums by like Flume or Madion, is you'll get those weird standout singles where you're like, that just hit me in the face. And like, did Flume really make that? Or did X producer really make that? But it's kind of like the weird quirky shit that you know that they just had the most fun doing. And so it's like that. It's like finding the balance for me. And then on the social media side, it's like the joke. It's one for the algorithm, one for you. So you just do like one for the TikTok, like one for the grabs to keep building your page, and then one for like the cool shit that you want to show, like whether it's artistic stuff or like I'm like, you know, again, we've talked about this a year and a half or a year ago on the podcast. Like I'm still to this day adjusting to the phone in front of your face and like how can I, you know, how can I do kind of more creative edits of the phone in front of your face that makes it for me feel more artistic and like you know, music focused than like, hey, look at me, look at me, look at me. And then right. I'll do some, hey, you love Illenium and Seven Lions and this and that. You're going to love my new single. Here yeah. you go. So it's kind of like finding that balance that makes it better for me. And then also seeing people like Sam Trivecta I'm originally from Tampa, but I'm now in Denver. So like when I yeah. was in Tampa, you know, now that I'm in Denver, there's artists on like every corner. Like Grizz lives like two blocks from me. Like mm-hmm. Taboo's here, Closey's here, like 1780L's here. Like so many artists are out here and like love it. But in Florida, it was kind of like few and far between where
right.
Trivecta, you know, I had this one side of the industry that I saw that I was exposed to first, where it was like I saw all these, you know, artists, and this was before the land of me understanding that everyone has a team and everyone, you know, some people have production help and some people are just a product, and mm-hmm. the artistic like involvement is so different per person, especially in electronic dance music, where like right. we are at the end of the day like this whole collaborative effort of certain individuals, and you can be either really involved or you can be like the face at the front of it, and you kind of see everything in between those two. Mm-hmm. Sam Trivecta was also in Tampa, and you know, like he never did local shows. He never played locally. He only focused on his music. And then through that, you know, I think now probably like maybe 8 or 9 years ago, he had a remix for Seven Lions, kind of got involved in it that way, had some very early Monster Cat releases. Mm-hmm. And like now fucking look at him. Like it's just kind of goes to like the journey is so different for everyone, but that mm-hmm. doesn't mean there's like a right or wrong way to do it. I think it's just like learning what works best for you.
100%. Yeah. And I think like when you mentioned Porter and you talked about like the different types of sets he was playing, I also thought like the word fun popped into my head, because I was like, that just sounds to me like he's having fucking fun. Like he's so just fun. Enjoying himself. And I think it also comes like there's a confidence that just comes to you as you get older and you understand mm-hmm. yourself better, that just like literally comes with knowing yourself and being in your skin longer. And I think yeah. like the longer you do that too, like you're just going to keep having like evolutions of yourself. So it's cool. Like this mm-hmm. is like that first chapter. But yeah, even like referencing these other artists, like I do think about that. I'm like, it's just different time periods in your life. Like even Claude Von Stroke and the Barclay Crenshaw
yep.
just popped into my head, because I was like, that's such a new journey. And I know he's been doing like the Barclay Crenshaw for a little while now, but like to fully like put a stamp on it and say, yeah, like I'm literally closing Claude Von Stroke and like moving into like my bass, drum and bass era and doing this entirely new project when he's built up such a huge brand is like a huge risk. But I think that's so exciting for an artist to like go and do.
He's in his fun era. He's like, yeah. he's I seeing stuff like that. Like I totally understand the work that it goes into and where he had to mm-hmm. be comfortable enough to take a risk like this. But yeah. like that is a perfect example where it's not necessarily like starting another project, but just doing something so different where it's like you have to have full confidence in yourself. And maybe a lot of people around you are like, what are you doing? Because I think in music, at the end of the day, a lot of it is looked at as a business sense and a business factor. And it's mm-hmm. like, why would you fix what's not broken? Mm-hmm. But we're in art and we're creatives, and I think sometimes like the business falls to the least side, and we have like a not as great attention on business as we should at times, but it's like for the sacrifice of like making art and like putting different stuff out into the world. Because like if he wanted to keep doing Dirty Bird and Claude mm-hmm. Von Stroke, which I'm sure he's gonna go back to at some point, like
sure, yeah.
I'm sure that's gonna be a thing again. I don't think it's really long term going anywhere. Yeah. He could do that and he'd be fine, but it's like now he gets to do something that makes him really excited. And I think it's also, you know, again, for the community and like for the culture, like he's going to take a bunch of people who maybe have never listened to this type of music before and give them like a gateway into like this mm-hmm. facet of dance music.
Yeah. And I want to mention, because like, so moving into shows, like where do your shows come into play now? Because I know I'm sure you're going to be doing a tour, but then you've also played like massive festivals this past year. So in like your vision for your project, like now, how do you envision your like live experience going? Like, what does that look like for you?
So moving forward, it's hard because for a really long time I was like, oh, well, we're going to differentiate like the DJ sets from Lizzie Jane, and then like the hybrid sets where like I sing and I DJ and I have more like performative elements. Mm-hmm. And when I would have the opportunity, like I've had this past year, which I've been like so grateful for, like again, like everyone from like the Excision teams of the world to like Collective, which is like Midwest kind of deal, like there have been a lot of talent buyers who have bought in on the project when they necessarily haven't had to, and there were no favors attached to it. It was just for the sake of like what we're representing and like what mm-hmm. we're building under the Lizzie Jane name. It it became very apparent to me that when I was like on it and I had the opportunity to be in front of thousands of people at a time, me singing was that facet point for a lot of individuals to attach themselves to my project, which I totally get. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, we're seeing mostly DJs. This girl's DJ. She comes out, she's singing a shit ton. Like mm-hmm. she's doing shit, you know, like without a backing track. Like we can tell it's there. Like the passion is there. And that was a way that I connected with people. I had a show at the Armory in January of last year, and I remember I originally wasn't gonna sing, and then I decided to sing last second, and I was mm-hmm. like, no, like this crowd is too good, because I was like, no, I need to differentiate anything bass music wise, like I'm not singing like da 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 da, and I was like, no, like I literally can't do that. And I sang, and then I was like, every set moving forward, like the typical Lizzie Jane set now is singing. It is a hybrid mm-hmm. set. Like that is who you're gonna see if you see her. You're never gonna see her and she's not gonna sing. I think there was only one show this year, and it was at Soundbar, that I didn't mm-hmm. sing. And I think if anything, especially moving into the new drum and bass stuff, so many remixes coming out in the next year that's like drum and bass orientated, as well as like a handful mm-hmm. of singles, where if anything, those will be labeled and platformed as DJ sets. But it's difficult because then I sing in all those fucking tracks too. So it's like, what do? Because then you see, you know, acts that are huge inspirations to me, like Coven and A Little Sound, and like all of those girls, they also sing. So I know there's a space for that in the world of drum and bass, especially here. So I think singing is just like a thing of like the project. Like I don't think that there's ever going to be a moment, unless it's a pure club show where I post on my story, or maybe it's said DJ set done. Mm-hmm. Like if you don't see that, then I will be singing during my sets, like purely just because now in my sets, I sing probably from anywhere from 15 to 20 songs. So, I mean, it's definitely like, I used to feel like it would be kind of like a feature, like you'd sing once or you sing twice. And then when I started to get away from playing shows so often and just playing larger shows, you know, you put together a touring set that's correct for whether the room you're playing in or the festival you're playing in. And you want to play the songs that people know you for. You want to play your new stuff. And I think it's definitely difficult singing songs that people don't know the lyrics to, but they're never going to know unless you sing them. So you just kind of have to take that little like slap on the wrist and like, yeah, like it's not going to be the same as if I drop like Hard in the Paint by Walk Flock and everybody's fucking singing and they're chanting and they know it. But it's just the balance. It's like, okay, you give one, you take one, you give one, you take one. And it's like finding those things where maybe you make a bootleg that's into a song that they know, that then you go, you know, into a new song that goes into like Runners by R.L. Grime, but at least they're like putting these weird things together. Like I love doing that, like taking like my acapellas of songs that aren't necessarily written for a DJ orientated set, and then like putting them in the right key with another song and making these like massive edits to where it's like, whoa, what did I just hear? And then hopefully through that, they can find the original song. And so that's definitely like your Lizzie Jane set moving forward. Singing, you got the melodic bass, you got my discography. I've definitely dipped my older songs and very, very heavy orientated songs no longer live in my sets, but like maybe one day down the road we do a throwback set or we do something fun where it's like, hey, play your million dubstep songs you release. Something like that. That would be fun. And then if I differentiate it, it'll be drum and bass. Now for the small like cap headline shows, we're targeting about 6 to 8 shows that are going to be in the beginning of summer, late spring, beginning of summer, kind of quarter two-ish, end of quarter two into quarter three. That will be like my first actual headline run. That's going to be around the EP, and I'll send you the EP after this. But like once you hear the EP, you can definitely understand where live elements come into play and like where they're facilitated. So in that, with me being in rooms that are like 100 people to 200 people, that's like really we're trying to target this like intimate vibe where I'm going to have some DJs open and I'm also going to have some live acts open. And like we're going to have this really dope variety of support acts. And with that, there will be like live elements present in the set. That's something that's going to be very unique to this very small headline run. We're going to see how it goes. Of course, like with anything with more gear, with more stuff in that lane, it becomes a lot more expensive. So you just have to see, like, do your fans care? Do they value this as a unique experience? Like, that's the reaction I'm hoping for. Or, you know, I've had people like Roman Silver come on where it was like, hey, like, this for the LA show, for my hometown show, 100%, this was it. But like over here, I don't think it would have mattered as much. And I think we could have ran it as like a hybrid set or a DJ set and still had the same success. So I think it's kind of like a guinea pig run where we're just going to see like where the ball rolls, what the reaction is, like not only from the EP, but from like the small kind of putting together a collective round of like support acts in combination with my set, definitely having hybrid live elements. And then, you know, if it pops off, maybe we'll do it on a larger scale, or maybe we just keep it this small intimate thing. I think this past year I've been really privileged to play some insane rooms like Red Rocks, Navy Pier, Armory, like amazing crowds, like perfect crowds for me to be put in front of. Cool debuts like Gold Rush and some other festivals that have been lovely. And now this year, I really just want to focus on like curating like my community a bit more and like really pushing into that and having those moments in like really small, intimate venues. And then if I want to put together something in the winter, then we do just like a hybrid, you know, DJ tour. I really want to do something in the mountains and do like just a drum and bass tour where it's just like Vail, Frisco, Steamboat, maybe you go to like Jackson Hole and it's all like snowboarding visuals behind you. Like that's a big thing like on the other side of my life that like I really love and enjoy. And again, it's just so many different things that are kind of accumulating to this top, and we're just gonna see what works. But as long as people are passionate about the music, which like they have been in the past year, and we've grown like our fan base so much in the last year, as far as like the opportunities I've been given to perform in front of these like huge audiences, we're just going to go for it. Yeah. 2024 is the year of me doing like really what I want and having the team behind me to do it. And then like, it's kind of like, I would rather have a smaller than larger team where we're all very focused and like bringing, like I call them like my idea DJs, because they bring like all these different ideas, and like that's how we continue to build in a really like unique way that's not necessarily going to be controlled, or like I'm not going to be dictated into X lane by the market because that's all I'm doing.
That makes sense. It's so cool to hear like your talk to you at this point in your career, and for anyone listening like who might be an aspiring artist or like just really interested in this industry, just like to hear the entire process of what goes in to you releasing new music, like you just speaking to coming up with your creative vision, like collaborations, like how it all comes together is like so interesting. I don't think I've ever like talked to an artist like in this detail of how it all comes together, but it also shows like all of the work that goes into it, which is like insane to see. And I'm pumped for like all of these different sides of you that you're going to be experiencing.
I'm ready. I'm so ready.
We got to chat about Red Rocks a little bit, because
okay,
when you're talking about like having these live sets and experiences, and then you open for Griffin, who is like probably one of my like OG favorite artists as well. Discovered him on SoundCloud back when he was just doing like remixes of tracks, and like now
Isn't
he has a live show. He's blowing up. It's insane. It's fucking crazy. Like, how was that? What was the experience like?
Yeah, Griffin, not only – I think it's always been a huge – since I've been backstage at my first EDC Orlando, because that was like the biggest festival that happened where I was when I was living, when I came up, to see these huge, huge teams roll in and like it's the most, I just always thought it was the coolest thing ever. Like whether it was Rez or Black Tiger Sex Machine or Alice in Wonderland, like everybody comes in, everybody has their backpacks on. They're like ready to fucking go and work. And it's like, wow, like that's how many people this like project employs and like gives like livelihood to. Like even like in December, I was with Sullivan King and Keaton's team and we were like waiting on Keaton and his TM and he's got like 5 people just for like a regular show and you know his guitar tech and this and that, and it's so cool to see that. And I saw that very much so firsthand with Griffin, obviously, because Red Rocks is Red Rocks. Mm-hmm. And I was blessed where, you know, Griffin can sell 2 days at Red Rocks and do really, really well, and not a lot of artists can do that. And he kept the same lineup for both days, and it was just such a unique, cool opportunity. And I remember the second day I was doing sound check and he was there and he was just like dope voice, like you killed it yesterday. I was like, thank you so much, like thanks for letting me remix you, like thinking, you know, he's got a huge team behind him. Mm-hmm. So it's like you don't really know on the back end, you know, he's definitely like a fan of the music that he has remix him and do all of that stuff, but his managers play a huge part and the label part plays a huge part. Mm-hmm. So it was just kind of like a very large, like full of gratitude, thank you for like having me here, because it was something that we weren't sure was going to happen this year. Like the remix was on Interscope, the remix is like my most played song to date, like mm-hmm. he like single-handedly has supported the project a lot, especially in the new direction where it's like, hey, like if anybody got like a hint of like where we're sound, our sound is going, like Griffin's fans did. Mm-hmm. And not only was he just like such a lovely human being, I was just like, you're like end goal, like your mm-hmm. end goal in like one lane of mine that like I really want to aspire to, where he's got all the live elements and he's got all the live performers with him and he's got such like a large lovely team that is just so professional and has really created this like huge community under his project. Like the community mm-hmm. is everything, to the point where I feel like there were more people from all over the world at Red Rocks than people who actually lived at Denver, which is like me now living in Denver, not always the case at Red Rocks, because right, you have right. such a fan base who lives here. Like so many people from New York, so many people from LA, from Miami, from overseas. Mm-hmm. And I had like the opportunity to just meet a lot of them. And it was like such a cool experience. And it was also one of the first times that I felt like every person in that crowd, like, was perfect to be a future like fan of mine. Like I felt like his fan base was perfect for where I'm at now mm-hmm. and where I'm going, where, you know, old Griffin era is pretty heavy. Like he did the melodic dubstep stuff. Mm-hmm. He's played and he still plays heavy songs. Like he still does that. But then, you know, he's kind of got this other very commercialized side to him that has the stuff with Kygo and does, you know, the tropical mm-hmm. commercialized pop housey shit. And he's someone who's been able to do that and kind of mature and evolve his project, but his fans are like down for everything. And I felt like I walked away both nights from Red Rocks with like just like really new fans. Like they bought my merch. That's awesome. Like they like a few of them came to my shows when like I was in their cities after. Like some of them came to the Chicago show at Navy Pier. Some of them were at Countdown. Like it was something that translated really heavy. And even though I always feel like I walk away from shows growing and taking a level up, I don't always feel like I obtain that many fans. And there's a lot of factors that go into mm-hmm. that. And, you know, sure. whether you're playing a huge festival or whether everybody's messed up or like, you know, mm-hmm. there's so many things. And it's like I got a Tuesday night Red Rock show, played first, played an hour after Doors. Like the first night, it was like raining at Doors and then like it stopped 30 minutes before my set. And I feel like I played to like, I don't know what the capacity is at Red Rocks. I can't remember it exactly, but I swear to God, I felt like I played to like 10,000 people. Like I felt like That's at awesome. The end yeah. of my set, there were, cause I did a moment where like everybody put the lights on their phones up or their lighters up or whatever. And I was like, this is going like all the way up. Like there's like, awesome. like every row looks like it's full. And that was like very cool. And then, you know, I woke up the next day and I was like, oh my God, I feel like I'm in like a theater cast. Like, let's do it again. Yeah. Like, let's go play Red Rocks again. And that was like also just such, such a lovely experience. And I felt like, again, I come off of every show usually wanting to change something, wanting to do something better. It can be something as much as, wow, I didn't expect California to be humid. I should have hairsprayed my hair and paid more attention to this. Or it could be, hey, you know, you're in your monitor was too low. You need to make sure you're practicing this before you sing because I saw videos and it didn't sound how you wanted it to sound and da-da-da-da. Like Red Rocks, I think, was one of the only shows. It was the first night because the second night I walked away with shit I wanted to change. The first night, it was like – I felt like we had brought everything we could have. Like we went 110% in. There were like no regrets, nothing I wanted to change. Like VJ did great. Audio guy did great. Voice sounded great. And again, working with teams like that, also at that level, like walking into a venue like Red Rocks, you know, they're just so on top of it. It makes your job easy. Like as long as you're prepared as an artist and your team is knowledgeable on how to handle things, whether they're coming in to run visuals or audio or whatever, it's just like cut and dry. Here you go. We're done. Let's go and ready to rock and roll.
Amazing. I'm so excited for you. Is that set posted anywhere or no?
No, it's not posted anywhere. I was honestly thinking of doing something for like – maybe like the beginning of the new year or – because my countdown set is going to be posted. So I was like I didn't want to do – two sets and post them but moving into this year want to start bringing like a GoPro with me and I want to do like YouTube sets like as long as I get the approval like posting. My friend Motipit has been doing this and it's been like growing his YouTube channel like substantially and I'm like dude if I could just hook up my GoPro we could just run it record it I'll dub over the audio and put it up there like that's the way I want to do it because I love SoundCloud but I feel like there's such like a visual aspect to my shows now, especially it's like if you're singing the visuals behind you, like all of my visuals are like I make all my visuals because I feel like I have the most understanding of like what I want the crowd to see, even though my capabilities are not anywhere near the capabilities of people who make most visuals. I want it to be mostly like art focused, so I want the visuals. The visuals are way more like what you would see for like a band or like a live performer in my opinion than like your average DJ visuals that are like crazy blender monsters like crazy shit so like I've made and catered most of my visuals to how I want my set to flow and like the aesthetics of it and I would love for that to like also be captured if I'm posting a set so we're gonna implement that this year and put some more sets up there but hopefully on YouTube more so than SoundCloud.
Beautiful. Yeah. All right. And then our last like thing I want to dive into with you, because we have like we've almost a full picture of the Lizzie Jane project, but we've lightly touched on the podcast. Like, how does that fit into the picture? And do you think that that has helped you reach a new audience as well? Because I'm sure you get feedback where people might even discover you from the podcast, whether it's like through a guest that they were interested in seeing and they got it. But like, how does that fit into the picture? And what have you kind of like learned from podcasting the last few years?
Okay. So the podcast has been something that was never part of the plan, never part of my endeavors. Like at any point in my journey was I like, well, I'm going to start a podcast that's also going to help my career. Like, no, I just, especially after COVID, became a huge homebody. There's a number of things that this ticks off for me. And in the midst of that, also now I realize like definitely helps a lot of up and coming acts, like definitely helps a lot of like fans learn about their artists more transparently and like learn about just the music industry in general, like whether they want to be involved on the back end or the front end. It was just supposed to be a space for us to talk and speak safely, transparently about things that have happened in the industry, about the way that the industry is facilitated, all the while learning more about, you know, these artists and like the records they've cut and, you know, their favorite festivals and journeys and moments in their career. And I think the first year and a half, I very much so did not want it to intertwine with Lizzie Jane. I wanted it to, because I thought in the back of my head, well, then people are going to look at me as like broadcaster or a podcast host or an interviewee, and they're going to oversee the music and you maybe skip it or not really pay attention to it. And then about a year and a half into it, I was just like, no, you just have to understand that there's really not anyone else in your space. There are a few, but our platforms are very, very different, where they are an artist and also a podcast host and a multimedia personality kind of deal. And you have to be okay with that. And they're going to both feed into each other. So I think that was a huge thing where it was like all of a sudden I had these teams and these artists that were much larger than where I was at the time that were reaching out saying, how can we get our artist on here? Or I was doing like cold calls, like they're never going to respond. Like, I'm just going to shoot my shot. Like I say that all the time, like just shoot your shot. Cause if they say no, you're back where you were to begin with, like just go for it. And I was getting people who were like, yeah, like let's do it. And I was like, holy shit. Like, okay. And in the back of my head, I just had to have like a reality check where if it wasn't for your podcast, like you wouldn't be dealing with this team right now. Like you wouldn't be doing this. And that all comes first full circle back into your music, whether that's a touring opportunity or collab opportunity, or maybe somebody who didn't know you existed now knows you exist and they want to be a part of your team. Like I've had all three of those things happen from the podcast. Right. And it's a way for me, like, Layla was in town. Lays was in town this past weekend for her show with Shaq at Mission. And, you know, I just told her transparently, like, I'm in Denver. Like, there's shows every night that I get invited to. And not only would it take every inch of my mental and, you know, capable fortitude to go to all of these, but I don't really feel like in green rooms or, like, in these back rooms, I'm, like, getting to spend time with these like artists and like actually get to hang out with them and get to know them. And it's not always about that. I understand like the support and like being there is important and stuff like that. However, if I like want to take the time to go and see you, like I'd rather go like grab dinner or us like go on a hike or me take you to do something cool because I know at least when I'm in like my show element, like it's not about socializing. It's about like me doing my job about me like making that experience the best possible for the people who paid to be there. It's not about partying. It's not about like getting distracted. So it's like I try and put myself in their shoes. And it's like if I was in town for a really big show, I like want my friends to be there. But I even experience it where it's like once all my people on the guest list show up, like I get super stressed out and I'm like, I can't focus on what I need to focus on. So I think the podcast was a very cool way for me to get to know other artists and people in our industry, all the while doing something that benefits the both of us and not necessarily having to be like out in a club till 3 a.m. And so like that worked well for me. Now, out of that, did not expect to be or see like the growth of like already knowing the podcasts that existed in this space where there's not a lot of them, but there's enough of them where you have to have something kind of cool going and some sort of unique like educational or comedy facet or entertaining facet to have like the fans come back and talk and talk and talk. But on like definitely in the last 2 years, when I'm out at shows or even when I play shows, some people will come up to me and be like, I've never seen you perform, but like I've listened to your podcast for the last 2 years. And it's like, even though that used to be hard for me to hear, now it's, well, they found you and came to your set because of your podcast. So it's like, that's okay for me. And it's something that I love doing. Like I really do. Like I like to talk a lot. I think I wish I knew a lot of things earlier on in my journey than I did. And everyone will still make mistakes regardless of what podcast you listen to. But I think that like I've just learned so much from these conversations and I've had so many artists where even now I used to be like the new breed artist. Like we were the new generation where we were the new heads, we were coming up. And now like there's a whole new wave of artists and I don't know any of them. And I need to like to be more educated and I want to support and I want to like become aware of their music and what they're doing and what they stand for. But it's like the new artists are like here and then there's another generation of artists underneath them. And this is just getting younger and younger and younger with like the popularity of electronic dance music and the fact that Ableton is available to everyone. Like we can do everything digitally on our computer. Now it may not sound as good and it may not be as good long term and it may like allow, you know, a million songs to be released into the world every day instead of a few or a few hundred kind of deal. Like it definitely creates a space where people can listen to these conversations and really learn from them. Mm-hmm. And I think that just goes back to, I do believe that every artist has this journey, or creator or influencer or whatever, like, has this journey in their head of how things are supposed to go. Like, oh, I'm going to do this and my page is going to blow up, and then I'm going to, you know, sign mm-hmm. with this agency, and I'm going to go on these tours, and then eventually I'll get here. And it very, like, rarely happens that way. So you just have to be, like, open to other opportunities and things that come along the way, because I very much so could have made this like a COVID thing, and then COVID's over, like, I'm done doing the podcast, like, like, that's what I did to Twitch streaming, which I still to this day, like, want to figure out a way to do it. But, like, you know, everybody in the world suddenly became a Twitch streamer, and we were doing the online DJ sets, and you were in our bedroom with us, and, like, but the podcast stuck, and I felt like immediately it just warranted an advantage point on my end from the type, from like the level of artist I was and how developed I was in 2020, to where then I was like on these people's radars, and it wasn't because of my music, it was because of the podcast. And like, again, a little bit difficult, but it, I wouldn't have like done it any other way, because I think now, especially going into this year, we have season 2 of the podcast officially debuts on Thursday. So, like, we're officially jumping to season 2, kind of a new look, definitely a little bit more professional, like, as far as, like, our production kind of stuff. Guests are definitely, you know, I will always value the conversation over the guest. However, getting certain guests can definitely bring more people to your podcast. You know that. I know that. Like, having certain caliber guests, like, that we already have lined up, or podcasts that are already recorded for this year, are very exciting. And then also just, like, again, the opportunity of certain live activations. We have some new advertisers coming on board. Like, everything's co-aligning there. And then this year, I'm just kind of like, yes, we're building the podcast, but now I kind of have like a mini podcast team that also are like podcast idea DJs. So like, I have that for the first time ever. And then this year is like the music year. So now it's kind of like, I felt like for the last year, 2 years, it's like, yes, I was definitely releasing singles, definitely had some cool remixes. But this year it's like, you're getting like all of the music I've ever released, I think, is being like, I think I'm releasing that amount of music this year. We have 2 EPs. We have 2 major remixes right now that are already signed. And then definitely, I'm sure, some more remix opportunities. And then I have like 10 singles that we're doing for some collab stuff, slotting already for demos. So like, all of that I want to come out this year. I want to go into next year with none of this music like on my shoulders, and like everything out into the world. And it's stuff that like I really love and I'm like super proud of. And like, we've gone through all the demos, we've thrown out certain things, we've kept other things. And I think that that's going to like, it's just going to amount for a huge like growth year and like the Lizzie Jane direction, to where if I don't have, we definitely have a good amount of shows. And I know just a lot of things, especially still at the level I'm at as an artist, like where like, we don't have an agent. I have a lovely management team. I have lovely other resources where we still get booking offers like a month and a half before the festival, 2 months before the festival. Like, those have been my years the last year and a half, where I know that's going to continue this year. But if we take a little bit of a step back on the number of shows we're doing, and we really just focus on building the right unique experiences, like, I'm okay with that, because then I know next year, after all of this music is out and after we've done like the festivals and tours that we already have confirmed for this year, it's going to be like a really cool like festival year. So
it's like a full, this is like come full circle, which is really, really cool. And this is like such a good note to end on. But I don't think, I think this, your podcast like only adds to what you do as an artist. And like, like you, I can say the exact same things. Like, it's such an amazing networking tool. This stuff is going to live on the internet forever. Like, it's evergreen. Like, people will be able to find you at any point, which is really cool. And it just gets your name out there in a different way. And it's not, like you said, so few people are doing this. So it's just like this another aspect of you, like as a businesswoman as well, which is really cool. So I'm very excited for the new season to see what you do. And like we talked about, you keep leveling up.
Slowly, realistically.
You got to do what you got to do and get there. But can you, I don't know if you can plug any key dates before I let you go, but like, where can people follow you? What dates should they know? When are things coming out?
Okay. All right. So you can follow me on everything at This Is Lizzie Jane, like everywhere, like TikTok, X, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. The EP Ignite, which is like my debut EP, is going to be coming out in mid-April. And then I have a tour in March with Midas, where I'm going to be in Chicago, Philadelphia, New York City, and Seattle, which I'm very excited for. We have a small round of headline dates that are going to be following that. So, like, please keep your eye out. Like, if you visit me on any of my, like, social media channels, like, sign up or, like, to text me or, like, join my broadcast channel or my Facebook group. Like, that's the best way, especially in today's, like, algorithm, that, like, you can see what I'm posting every day and, like, what is going on with the project and when there's going to be merch drops and this and that. And so that I would say over anything, like, go join my broadcast channel, go join my Facebook group, like, that's where, or my Discord, like, that's where we really, like, continue the community, and you can, like, meet the other people that go to shows and, like, are involved. And then the podcast, very excited for season 2. First episode drops on Thursday. And then Heartbreak VIP 2. I just dropped a single called Heartbreak, which was, like, the first time that I really played live elements and, like, mixed it to where you knew I was playing guitar. In addition to singing, I released that in November. We have the VIP that's a very, like, club heavy dance VIP coming out in January. So right after that will be the first single from the EP.
Yes, so I'm very excited.
Yeah, the first half of the year will be very, very filled with music. And then we have some really cool things around EDC Las Vegas time that I can't announce yet. And no, this is not me saying I'm playing EDC Las Vegas, that I will be involved in. And yeah, I think it's just going to be, like, so cool. Yeah, again, this year is just a year for, like, leveling up, getting more people involved in the project, like, building a team, which is, like, super important, of just people who are really not only just business oriented, just people who are passionate about the project and where it's going, and continuing to, like, expand. So
Yes, the authentic era is here for Lizzie Jane.
I'm so
excited for you, and I can't wait, like you said, to just, like, get everything out there in the world. And I know, like, how hard you've worked on this, so I'm so pumped for you. And
we'll
link everything down below. Go stream, follow, support, do all the things, check out Lizzie in person. And you guys can also connect with us at Rave Culture Cast on all of the platforms. If you enjoy this, share this with somebody today. Word of mouth is the best way to get this out there. So share a link, you guys. And we hope you have an awesome week. Thanks for watching.
Bye. Thank you guys. Bye.